Every Woman is a feminist show about women and girls making a difference and the males by their side. As 50% of the world's population and 53% of eligible U.S. voters, women are not a special interest group, and every woman needs to work and vote toward nothing less than 50-50 participation in the social, political, economic, and environmental arenas. The views and opinions expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, KKFI, staff, volunteers, board, or sponsors. Good afternoon. This is Sharon Lockhart. We have a full house today. On the engineering board is Ebony Johnson. Amy Bell is back with us, and Marvita Oliver. Good to have you all here. And our guests today are going to be talking about the T out of STEM. That's science, technology, engineering, and math. But first, we're going to go to Amy for some news.
We have breaking news about the Equal Rights Amendment from the ERA Coalition. The ERA Coalition welcomes the news that the Nevada legislature voted to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment today on March 22nd. Most Americans think the Constitution already guarantees women equal rights, but it doesn't. The Equal Rights Amendment was passed by Congress in 1972 and ratified by 35 states, three states short of the 38 needed to put an amendment in the Constitution. Nevada's action to ratify the ERA, the first such vote since 1977, highlights the growing awareness and support for the Equal Rights Amendment, which is needed to help women combat pay inequity, pregnancy discrimination, and gender-based violence. There is increasing momentum throughout the country in support of the Equal Rights Amendment. In North Carolina, legislation to ratify the ERA was introduced in the State Senate and House in February, and 10 local resolutions in support of this legislation have already been passed. Ongoing recent efforts to ratify the 1972 Equal Rights Amendment include bills in Illinois, Virginia, Florida, and Utah, which in both Illinois and Virginia have been passed in the Senate several times. Sex equality is good for men, families, and communities, as well as women, said Jessica Newworth, president of the ERA Coalition. We are way behind the rest of the world in prohibiting sex discrimination in our Constitution. It's long overdue. The ERA Coalition represents 73 member organizations and millions of women and men who are working for passage and ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment and for greater public understanding of the need for equal treatment of women. I got cut off. I'm sorry.
And we would like to introduce our guest here today, Sarah Dutzman. Is the program director for Kansas City Women in Technology's Coding and Cocktails program, which teaches front-end web development skills to adult women in the Kansas City area. In addition, Sarah is a software architect at Cerner Corporation and has been a software developer for 9+ years. She started her career working in database development and is currently part of a team that works on special projects focused on health clinics and fitness centers. As a part of this team, she utilizes a number of different web technologies. In addition, Bill Ayakutabi, Bill is the program director for Kansas City Women in Technology's Coder Joe KC program, with the aim of teaching logic and computer programming skills to children in the Kansas City area. As an Eagle Scout, he understands the importance of teaching children valuable skills that will help them throughout their lives. In his free time, Bill is a senior software engineer at The Nerdery with over 16 years of professional software development experience. Welcome, Sarah and Bill.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Welcome, everybody here. This is Every Woman. This is Marvita Oliver. And I'm just really glad to be here in a room full of people who like to help each other and realize that it takes people helping each other to get things done. And I think that's why I even got involved with the groups that are in this room, the groups of people that are in this room. And, for example, with Coder Dojo, Bill, I got to know you guys because I heard about Coder Dojo. And I was like, what is that? And I wanted to volunteer, and I went out finally. And can you just tell us a little bit about what Coder Dojo is?
Yeah, so we're a local chapter of a global organization. The Global Coder Dojo organization is based out of Dublin, Ireland. And we teach, as Ebony said, computer programming skills to children aged 7 to 17. We do that through a variety of technologies and skills that we teach them, especially Googling. Googling is a life skill that kids have to know these days. The better they can do that, the better they can research papers, and they'll do better in school.
And thank you for that. I had no idea it came out of, you said Ireland? Or
mm-hmm. Yeah, in Dublin.
Is that okay? So I had no idea about that. I just thought it was an odd name, Coder Dojo. All right. One thing that I learned about Coder Dojo is you have a room full of kids who, and a room full of parents. Can't forget that part, but they're both in the room, and the kids are learning to code, and they're doing just great things, and they take to it so naturally. Why is it you think it's important for kids to be encouraged to learn these kinds of skills?
Well, I mean, technology pervades every aspect of life these days, especially in the United States, where we've got Silicon Valley in California, the Silicon Prairie here in Kansas City, with the introduction of Google Fiber a few years ago. Technology is booming here. And the more kids learn about it, the better they'll be able to keep up and compete in the future job market.
I just wanted to ask about when you're teaching kids coding, because when I was a kid and I was learning coding, I basically got sat in front of a green computer. You know, everything was green on it. It wasn't even black and white. It was just green on green. And they gave us this, like, big, giant booklet of, like, code that they just wanted us to copy line for line. None of the adults knew anything about coding. And basically, I just got sat there in front of this little computer to, like, you know, mess up a comma, you know, 50
right,
pages back and have to go try to figure that out.
Right.
So I hated coding as a kid because that was not a particularly enjoyable experience. So we've changed a little bit.
I have to say that I'm obviously the oldest person in this room. And when you talk about coding, I'm like, what the hell are you talking about?
And I think, Bill, that's why I'm picking on you early for two reasons. You're the only guy in the room, and we're wanting to get that coding. What is coding? You know, what is that? And why is that so important?
Right. Coding is just shorthand for saying computer programming. Anything that you can do to tell the computer what you want to do and how you want it to do it. Whether that's a desktop application on your Windows or your Mac computer, an app on your phone, a website that you visit, coding encompasses all of that.
All right. Thank you, Bill, for entertaining us. So now, Sarah, one thing that I learned coming back to Kansas City was that there was a really strong there were a lot of women's organizations that were there to support each other, especially in entrepreneurship and then in tech. But at the same time, I also found that not everybody knows about it. So how can this be? How can you have such a strong organization, but still people don't really, not as many people as I would think, know about it? And if you don't mind, can you tell us what Kansas City Women in Tech is and what they do?
Absolutely. So Kansas City Women in Technology is an organization with the goal to get more women in technology in the Kansas City area. It was started back in 2013 by our Jennifer Wadella because she felt the women in Kansas City's tech community really needed a support network and kind of a build a community around each other to for support. We do what we can to get the word out and share the word.
Well, I don't mean it in a bad sense. I think the women who are in tech know about it, but I think other people are surprised to realize that there is a really strong community for women in technology here in Kansas City. So it's not in a bad sense so much as it is that there is a strong community here. And I think one of the reasons why we wanted you guys here was so you could let us know some of the great things that you guys are doing with your different organizations.
And we have seen such a huge boom in our participation across our programs this year as well. So it seems like 2017 is really becoming the year of coding for women in Kansas City. We have been consistently selling out every single month this year, and it's really exciting to see more people getting involved and interested.
When you say selling out, what types of activities are you selling out?
So I'm the program director for Coding and Cocktails, which is
Coding and Cocktails?
Yes.
You mean you can mix the two?
You can.
Uh-oh. Does that work well?
It does.
For commas and periods?
It does. You know, surprisingly, the cocktails can help decrease some of that intimidation factor you get when you start looking at the computer screen and say, how do I tell it what to do, what I want it to do? So, you know, those cocktails will kind of like bring that intimidation down. And then we teach different front-end web development skills, different topic every single month.
So is that round one of the cocktails or round two that they start kicking in and making things better?
That's a great question.
No, go ahead. But I think that's a great point. Now, that just so we specify, because we started out talking about kids and coding, but when you talk about coding and cocktails, who are you talking about that's participating in that kind of event?
So Jennifer saw that, you know, once we had these programs up and running for the children, you know, their parents were kind of interested too. And some of the moms were like, you know, that looks really fun. Like, how do I do that? Where do I go to learn? And so she started the Coding and Cocktails program back in 2015. And then we have been growing, and we now run monthly sessions every month. And so we're focused on teaching adult women the skills to do the front-end web development.
What would you say have been some of the things or some of the milestones or great accomplishments that have resulted out of like that organization, just the Women Coding and Cocktails? Anything in particular that stands out to you? If not, hold on a minute, because I know you also have Coding and Cupcakes.
We do.
So we do have a non-alcoholic version with the Coding and Cupcakes. And can you tell us more about the Coding and Cupcakes as well?
Yeah, let me go back to Coding and Cocktails for a minute. You know, we have had several women go through our programs, and we have some of our former students that are now serving as mentors to the new students that have been coming
great.
In. So that's been pretty exciting to see them really pick up those skills and develop that and then be able to teach other women and pass it on.
Can I say one thing? I was part of, I know there's another group. There's so many organizations with Kansas City Women in Technology, like Django Girls. Okay, so I kind of got a little bit more involved by becoming vulnerable and sitting in a room to learn how to code. And what I learned was that, honestly, if you're surrounded by a supportive environment, and you don't try to do it on your own, especially if you're not confident about coding, you can do a lot and you can get a lot done. And it can really give you a strong sense of confidence, at least for that weekend. When you get into the next week and you're not around that environment, maybe things change a little bit. But it's amazing how much you can get done just because of the people who are in the room sitting next to you. How did you guys realize that that was part of the secret sauce, Bill?
So Django Girls, you know, is a national organization, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And Jennifer saw the need in the local market for, you know, a program like that to teach, you know, Django is specifically a programming framework for a specific programming language.
Python.
Okay.
For Python. And yeah, she saw the need for more Python training here locally, and contacted the people who had that up, and you know, wanted to start up a local chapter.
What are some of the perhaps misnomers that people can have about learning coding? Because I'm pretty low tech, and I hear you're saying that people are having fun doing this, but then I think, I don't know that would interest me. I hear what you're saying that you go and do. What is it that some people that come to the class that maybe said, oh, I thought it was going to be this and it turned out to be this? You know, I think there's a lot of things that I don't know that I don't realize maybe I would enjoy it.
So early on, when I was getting into software development, I kind of had the picture in my head of the stereotypical, like, somebody sitting in a dark basement staring at a computer screen hacking away at their keyboard.
Yeah.
But it turns out that's not really what it is. It's a lot of, like, problem solving. You know, if you like brain teasers, you know, coding is something that will probably be another interest to you as well. Okay. It's a lot of problem solving and figuring things out, trying to figure out how do I attack this problem. Mm-hmm. So it ends up being a lot of fun.
Yeah, I find that it's really more a creative endeavor than a scientific endeavor. Mm-hmm. You have to really be able to think outside the box and put yourself in your clients' or your customers' shoes and think like them. You know, creative writing courses help a lot. Hobbies like playing Dungeons and Dragons or other role-playing games, that's a big hobby of mine, and I find that it helps a lot, just getting me out of my own head and being able to, you know, think as a different person, trying to think from a different perspective.
Mm-hmm. See, I'm really glad you said that, because I am a very, like, technical-minded person, like, in step one, step two, step three, but I've always struggled with coding because I sit there and they're like, I don't know what to make. I mean, you wind up having to draw a picture or something, and I'm going, I don't draw pictures. What is this asking me to do? Like, you know, just give me the steps and I'll follow them. Like, I can program a math thing, but a lot of times it is a lot more, you know, where do you want it to go? I don't know. Tell me where it's going to go. You know, I don't like that creative element of it, which is kind of maybe a little bit odd. A lot of people, probably that's one of their favorite things about coding.
I think that's a good point. I remember, a long time ago, when I was first learning coding, I realized after I learned a little bit and then met the people who really knew how to code, I realized that there was a language that I didn't know. And it wasn't so much the language of the coding, but it was the language of the people who talked to each other and even knew how to do it. To a certain extent, I felt like you had to know what to do and how to do it before you could even think about getting it done. But I think now with the coding that I see, especially and at the Coder Dojo, I see that there's just a lot more user friendly, and it lends itself much better to people being able to sit down and conceive, well, it could do this or it could do that, and I can make that happen, you know. And can you say anything about that?
Yeah, one of the great things about working with kids in particular is they're still in a completely creative space. You know, they're not as jaded, the right word, not as fatigued by the day-to-day. And so they, you know, just they're on creatively all the time. And it's not so much that we teach them about computer programming, at least not at Coder Dojo. It's very self-directed for them. We try to just be there to support them, to teach them how to Google their own problems and solve the problems themselves. One of our biggest rules is, you know, hands-off keyboards for the mentors and the parents. Mm-hmm. Because we want the kids to be doing, because they learn best by doing it for themselves.
As a mentor, I can say, yay, thank you for the hands-off part. Because honestly, when I'm there as a mentor, I go and I say, so, what are you doing? And they tell me what they're doing and they show me, and I'm like, wow. You know, how I would have never thought to do what they're doing. But then they teach me, and I've learned a lot just by watching what those kids do in Coder Dojo. So it's a great policy, because a lot of times I think parents who come for the first time, they bring their kids and they want to kind of guide them through, but they really don't need it. And it's right. A great environment for them getting that chance to learn.
I have a question. I'm sitting here trying to picture, what if I wanted to code? Would I go to my computer and open a Word document?
No, there. A lot of developers use what's called an integrated development environment, or, you know, a text editor, and to write their code. And there's several different options out there, and a lot of developers get into kind of developer wars over which one is the best. But that's kind of where you write your code, and then there's kind of a whole environment that you set up on your computer to be able to do the development. And we cover some of that in Coding and Cocktails.
Can you both walk me through it? For instance, with the Coder Dojo, if I have a niece and nephew, if I was interested in them coming to the program, what would happen when we got, like, what's the process?
As I said, Coder Dojo is pretty self-directed by the kids. Mm-hmm. It's pretty unstructured. You know, you come in, we have a registration process on Eventbrite, and, you know, we come in, we have to sign up, just sign in, get checked in, and then we typically try to seat kids by the technology that they intend to use that day. Mm-hmm. So we'll use Scratch, which is a very visual programming language better suited towards younger kids. If they want to work on HTML to create a website, we'll have a table dedicated to that, or to JavaScript to make their websites do cool things. Mm-hmm. We'll give like some opening remarks and kind of present the concept and the theme for that day. Mm-hmm. So we try to focus on like one programming concept, like variables or lists or functions. And then a theme, like for February, it was Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. Or for November, it was elections and voting. And then we work for a while, and then at the end we have some presentations. The kids that want to can sign up to present their projects at the end of the session.
Can you tell our audience where to go exactly on Eventbrite for the registration?
Yeah, the easiest way to get there is through CoderDojoKC.com. That's where we list all of our upcoming events, as well as information about our previous events, you know, our previous themes and our previous concepts. You know, information about some of the mentors and the leadership team that should be at every session, that kind of thing.
Okay. Can you spell that out, Coder Dojo?
Sure.
Somebody's like, what?
CoderDojoKC.com.
Thank you. And the same for you, Sarah.
I just wanted to add, too, we've been talking a lot about Coding and Cocktails and Coder Dojo. We also have Coding and Cupcakes, which is another parent and daughter programming introduction where they develop a cupcake website together. And so that's also a really fun program. And then we also have Tech Talks, which are like networking and social events. So those are always on the third Wednesday of the month. And so you can find information on all of these different events across Kansas City Women in Technology at kcwomenintech.org.
Okay, that's good. But the same for you, like whether it's, if it's Coding and Cocktails, so which is for adult women, what's the process? Do I go to Eventbrite as well and sign up, and then what happens when I come?
Yep, so all of our signups are on Eventbrite, and then when you show up, we kind of seat everyone by the operating system on their laptops, whether that's, you know, an Apple Mac device or a PC with Windows on it. And then we start off and you can grab cocktails as you come in. And then we start off with a presentation on the specific topic that we have for that month. And from there, we have also a worksheet that we have developed for the students to work through. And then we have this fantastic group of mentors who are all developers in their day jobs, and they help support the students as they work through and run into points where they're like, I have no idea what this means, or, you know, I heard you say this, but it didn't quite mm-hmm. click with me. The mentors can help come over and talk you through something or help you work through those tough spots.
Well, I know reading a lot of news, and especially tech news, this is one of the areas where women have struggled to be accepted, and particularly with game developers and people who are programming on that side of the computer world. Is that something that you've seen? Is that something that your group acknowledges, helps people work through? I mean, what are you doing to say to women, because I think this is a hard sell. Hey, coding's fun. People might be terrible to you, but we're going to still have your back and you should do it anyway. That's a hard conversation, it seems.
It is a hard conversation. And personally, I have been lucky and have not run into a lot of that, negative aspect. But, you know, it is out there in some places, and that's why I think it's really important to become a part of this community of women, to be able to support each other. And, you know, maybe somebody else in the community has been in the through some of that tough stuff and can help you talk through something that's been going on with you, or, you know, other people have been had similar experiences, and it's nice to have that extra support that can help lift you up and get you through those tough times.
So are you seeing maybe women who are just coming into college age or something, are they starting to maybe select this field a little bit more, or is it still challenging to attract people that this is an okay career choice for them? I would have been too chicken to do it. I mean, part of it is also, I'm like, no, I can't create a thing. I just do a thing. Like, that's not, I don't want to create a thing. I'm not the most creative person. But also, you know, it does take a certain kind of strength to go into something that might be giving you extra challenges as a career path.
Absolutely. The unfortunate thing is that female computer science graduates has been going downhill since the 80s. One of the tough things about getting into technology is, you know, if you don't have those, you know, female role models that you can look up to, because there aren't enough women in tech already, it's hard for you as a female to imagine yourself in that role when you don't look up and see somebody else doing it that is similar to you. And that's where a lot of the mentoring becomes important too. You know, when we have more female mentors, that can help show the kids at Coder Dojo that, you know, there are other females around that are doing this stuff, and it's cool and fun, and you can do it too.
With that, I want to make sure with the Eventbrite for the coding and cocktails, or is it KC Women in Tech, or what do people specifically go to?
You can also, I would start at kcwomenintech.org, and then there's a subsection that has our events, and you can check out all the different ones, coding cocktails, coding cupcakes, and get to the Eventbrite sign-ups from there.
Okay. And are there any costs to attend the events? And if so, is it listed on the website?
Yes. Okay. Coding and cupcakes and coding and cocktails have a fee, and Coder Dojo, it does not have one.
Okay.
Just one last question following up with what Amy was talking about. It is true that the number of women going into computer programming has gone down, especially in college. But does that kind of open things up in a way? Because I know, do you necessarily have to do programming in college to become a good programmer?
No. I personally studied computer programming, but a lot of my coworkers did not. I work with people that have philosophy degrees, they're English majors. One of our previous mentors at Coder Dojo was an accountant, and she knew nothing about technology coming in, and she actually started learning HTML from the kids as she was helping them. So for Coder Dojo in particular, you don't need to be any kind of technically minded to come in and help the kids. But, you know, day-to-day in a professional setting, I work with a lot of people that did not study computer science in school, and yet they've gone on to become really successful programmers.
So there's hope for, you know, a lot of people, and even people who are late starters, from what you're saying. And also there's a lot of programs that are out there, Launch Code, other organizations that are out there that offer programmers an opportunity to get into that kind of environment, even online, or, you know, not having to go to a university setting.
Right. And Coding and Cocktails falls right in line with that. It's specifically intended for women who aren't currently in a technical role but want to learn more about programming technology.
Well, guys, that's very encouraging for me to hear that you had an accountant who learned how to code better from the kids. So that, there's hope for me yet. So I will be coming back to mentor some more. Is there anything you guys want to share with us to let us know before we that you think the audience might need to know about women in coding, or Coder Dojo, or coding and cupcakes and coding and cocktails?
I would say, you know, if you are somebody who's in tech already, we would love to have you join us as a mentor. There's some information about that on the website as well. We are a nonprofit organization as well. So we have, you know, we always look for sponsors and,
I don't really have much else to add other than, check out our websites and, come see what we're all about.
Well, thank you so much, Sarah Dutzman and Bill Ayakutubi. I want to say it right on air.
Ayakutubi.
Ayakutubi. Thank you so much to both of you with Kansas City Women in Tech and the Coder Dojo program and Women in Coding and Cocktails and being here on the Saturday.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You've gotten me excited about doing coding projects again for fun. Awesome. But only where they tell me what to do. I'm not creating things.
And we will be back. You're listening to the Every Woman Show here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
This is Terrell
and Aaron.
And we are Project Rally. And we would like for the people to join us on our experience of working to create a community resource around gardening and education to feed ourselves. We want you to tune in Monday on Eco Radio from 6 to 7 to join our conversation about community garden, the education, and how we will be used as a resource for the people.
The Stockyards Brewing Company's Spring Band Auction is coming March 31st to April 2nd. Live bands on the air, auctioned off for a two-hour show. Upcoming bands and instructions on bidding at kkfi.org/band auction. And thanks to our sponsor, Stockyards Brewing Company, a craft brewery now open Wednesday through Sunday in the historic Stockyards District. Learn more about their event space, live music, and local brews at their tap room online at stockyardsbrewing.com.
And we are back with Every Woman. I'm Amy Bell, here with Ebony Johnson, Sharon Lockhart, and Mervita Oliver. And now we're actually going to go to a phone interview that we're going to do with Heather Owsley with the Kansas People's Agenda. And she is joining us by phone because she's currently in the middle of a walk to Topeka to raise awareness about school funding issues and to demand that the legislature fix this problem. Heather, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us, or for having me.
So one of the questions that I had was, is the Kansas People's Agenda, did this used to be affiliated with Game On?
Yes. The last 4 years, I walked to raise awareness about the need to fund public education through the platform of Game On for Kansas Schools. And this year, we recognized that there was a need to expand. Public education is the bedrock of everything, and I really, you know, we all want public education to be funded. But at the end of the day, you know, we can demand public education funding, but if we don't have a tax policy that produces revenue, we're not going to get it. And public schools aren't the only things in Kansas that are impacted by the lack of revenue. We're diverting about $1 million a day from the Department of Transportation, so our roads aren't. Our infrastructure isn't being worked on. The Department of Children and Families is short 463 social workers, so our most vulnerable are not getting the services that they need. And so really it's so much bigger. It involves so many different aspects of our lives here in Kansas. And so this year's walk is about restoring the revenue so that everyone's needs can be met. And so we've got Kansas People's Agenda is a coalition of multiple different groups with various issues that are dear to them, and so we've all come together to advocate for fixing our tax structure in Kansas.
And it looks like, as well, you've got you've expanded where the walks originate from. In the beginning, it was only starting in Merriam, and now you're going to have a few different groups of walkers meet you in Topeka. Is that correct?
Yeah, so last year we expanded out, and this year we got more. So we have a group of walkers coming from Manhattan and a group of walkers coming from Emporia, and then we will all converge on Topeka tomorrow night if everything goes well. The weather's not been super cooperative, so we're all just crossing our fingers. Manhattan and Emporia have been pretty rained out, so they had severe thunderstorms and hail. And so those walkers are kind of hunkered down at the moment, kind of waiting to see if the weather will pass for them or not, or if they have to, they're thinking about calling it where they're at and then coming and joining us, because our walk right now as we're going through Lawrence and headed towards Lecompton is we have a lull in the rain. So if they come and do a little part with us, and then they'll go back to their various arms or legs of the walk.
Well, I know a few people that have joined you every year, and I'm happy to hear that it's been expanding. It's grown in attention since there's more people joining you, but have you started to see that attention translate into pressure in the legislature? Are we moving in the right direction now?
I think that we are moving in the right direction now. Kansas actually picked up a number of reasonable legislatures in the last election cycle. So there was a tax bill that made it through both the House and the Senate, and it went to the governor's desk, and the governor vetoed it. And then it went back to the House, and the House was able to override that veto. But then when it got to the Senate, it stalled, and they were not able to override the governor's veto, but they were only short 3 votes. So we just need to flip 3 senators. And that is surely doable. So the 3 things that the tax policy needs to be sustainable, we need to reinstate a third income tax policy. I'm sorry, I'm on the side of the road, so it's getting a little noisy. But we need to reinstate that third upper bracket income tax, because they eliminated the upper bracket in 2012. We need to repeal the ratchet mechanism that the governor called the glide path to zero. What it does is it puts this ratchet in place. So anytime you bring in additional tax revenue from the year before, that tax revenue goes to automatically lowering the remaining tax bracket, so that any additional revenue, instead of going to fund services, it goes to providing additional tax cuts. We have to repeal that ratchet. And then we also have to reinstate taxes on pass-through income for LLCs and S-corps. So it started at like 150,000 LLCs and S-corps and other pass-through income entities that didn't have to pay income tax. And then it expanded so that it's now 330,000 businesses aren't paying on that pass-through income. So if those 3 things were to happen, we would have a sustainable policy. And that is what was in the policy plan that was vetoed, and then they were able to override in the House, and we're so close in the Senate. And so right now what we're doing is we're hoping that just this little bit of attention, like this little bit of pressure coming from us, if it combines with the pressure coming from all over Kansas, and then we have a few more reasonable legislators that can help sway their colleagues. This is doable. This is doable. We can fix this. We can totally fix this.
Now, what do we mean by that pass-through entity? We've got the LLCs and the S-corporations, which is just a specific way of incorporating a business. There's a few ways to do it, but that's one of the ways that they can incorporate that makes this pass-through income. And one of the ways that I heard it described really well is that, say if you're at a law office, the partners aren't going to be taxed, but the paralegals
are. Right. That can't be fair. It can't be fair that the partners in a law firm or the doctors in a practice aren't paying income tax, but when you have like the secretaries and the paralegals and the administrative staff still paying income taxes, that can't be a fair policy.
This is Ebony. Can we just let that breathe for a minute? Because I mean, the rest of us in the studio, we were like, oh, that's what you mean. Like, this is what that means.
And that's been going on in Kansas for, 4 years now?
Five years.
It was passed in 2012, but I didn't think it went into effect until 2013.
Right. It was passed in 2012, and it didn't take effect until 2013.
Okay.
So that is true, but the income from 2013 down has been going down. We're short about $500 million every fiscal year. So this fiscal year right now, we're still short, I think, $300 million, and it's all been coming from cuts. So we've been cutting all the things that are important to us. We've been cutting public education. We've been cutting funding to take care of our roads, and not only is that not safe to have, unstructurally sound roads, but there's a lot of road workers that don't have work in Kansas anymore. You know, like contractors are taking their guys to Oklahoma or to Missouri to get them work, and they should be working here in Kansas.
You know, that's another one that I think we need to unpack a little bit, because mm-hmm. here in the Kansas City area and in Johnson County and in Wyandotte County, even as far out to Lawrence, we're seeing a lot of construction. We're still seeing road work, and I think it's hard for us to understand that that's currently an anomaly in the state. So any stories that you've heard from Western Kansas and what it's like where they really don't have these infrastructure projects that for some reason we're still doing in Johnson County?
Well, some of the projects in Johnson County were already scheduled and planned, and so they were stayed on the timetables because they were money had already started going out for those projects, and so those projects were going to be finished. And additionally, some of the local projects are also funded by local dollars. So the Northeast Kansas has a little bit better chance of finishing projects or getting projects accomplished. There are roads in Western Kansas where they've just, instead of repairing them, they've turned them into gravel so that they don't have to keep up the maintenance on it. And for some people that, you know, they're like, oh, well, so there's a gravel road in Western Kansas. But it actually is a pretty big deal. I mean, we've always prided ourselves in Kansas on having solid and stable roadways, one, so that people can transport goods, and then also so that people can get back and forth. And when we were studying some of the history of public education funding in Kansas, one of the things that I thought was really interesting was that back when Kansas first became a state, one of the first superintendents for the state decided that kids in rural counties needed to have access to education just as kids in more urban areas of the state did. And so he pushed to have a wagon that would go and pick up rural children and transport them to their local, you know, one-room schoolhouse. And that was one of the things that they credited for starting the push to have good roads in our state, was that they wanted to make sure that kids in rural areas could get to their local school. And so, we have this long history of taking care of the things that make Kansas a pleasant state to live. I mean, what everybody says about our state is, well, we don't have mountains and we don't have oceans, but, you know, it's a great place to raise a family, and it's a great place to send your kids to school, and, you know, you can, we raise good crops and we raise good kids. And to do that, we have to have, you know, the services from the state that would allow us to do so.
Well, you know, and I also used to say, and we've got common sense.
Yes, we do have common sense. I think that Kansans have a lot more common sense than what represented us in the legislature before this last election cycle. And the legislature reflects the state a little bit more this year than it did last year. And then, you know, here in a couple years, we'll have the opportunity to bring it back around to reflecting our values just a little bit more.
Heather, do you think that one of the issues is that many people just don't know that this is actually going on? Because I can't, just to Amy's point about common sense, if you said to me, for example, if I'm a paralegal and you say to me, you're going to pay taxes, but the lawyers in your law firm are not going to pay taxes, are you okay with that? I can't imagine anyone really saying, yes, I'm okay with that. So is it possible that a lot of people just aren't really aware that things like this are going on and it's allowed to pass and happen?
I think people are more aware now than they were before. Mm-hmm. You know, our tax policy is very unpopular. In this last election cycle, people overwhelmingly told politicians who were campaigning that they wanted the LLCs to be taxed fairly and that they wanted to get out of this constant state of crisis. So I think people are tuning in and starting to pay attention. I'm just getting in a car so that they can catch me up. I stopped walking. So if you hear it beeping in the background. So when we're walking, everybody who passes us is, you know, waving and high-fiving and honking, and people come out to see us while we're walking to bring us coffee or snacks. And I think that Kansas is paying attention. And I think that the election choices we made this past cycle reflect that. we went into the election cycle with about 25-ish so moderate Republicans and 28 Democrats, and we came out with 35 solid moderates and a few more who would lean moderate on certain issues, and 40 Democrats. So, and Kansas is one of the only states that went that direction in local politics. So I do think Kansans are paying attention. And the fact that we're so close, the fact that they were able to override the governor's veto on the tax policy in the House, and they did so really with a good number of folks, and that we're only three away in the Senate, that's remarkable considering how far to the other side of the spectrum we were just in 2012 and 2014.
You know, one of the things, too, is that when they pushed through these bills, they didn't say that lawyers aren't going to pay taxes and paralegals are and doctors aren't going to pay taxes,
but secretaries are.
They said
it was going to start jobs.
Yeah, they said it was, okay, we're going to lower the taxes on businesses. They said that it was lowering the taxes on the business entity itself. And they made this argument that that's how jobs are created, that when businesses have to pay less tax, that more jobs are created. But a lot of people were sitting there going, jobs are created when there's more demand for the product or service that you're selling, not just because there's some tax money freed up. And the tax savings was actually on that pass-through end to the individuals who were taking the profits off of the business, not the business itself. Okay. But they did a lot of talking about how it was going to save monies on businesses, and that it was going to be business friendly, and that we were going to attract businesses to Kansas. And yeah. Did we ever attract businesses to Kansas, Heather? I can't remember.
Well, now it depends on who you talk to. But you know, as far as I can tell, and I'm looking at the numbers, it looks like, you know, so maybe instead of creating a bunch of new businesses, that instead there was a lot of restructuring of businesses so as to utilize the new tax break.
Yeah.
Yeah, the number of corporations dropped from, by several hundred. The number of registered corporations, I mean, maybe 75% of them became LLCs or S-Corps.
And so when that happens, when it's really just becoming a restructuring incentive as opposed to a, you know, new business creation incentive, then that doesn't seem to really be benefiting anybody. Mm-hmm. And the number of jobs, I also think that they said it would bring 20,000 new jobs a year. I mean, there was a number. They put a number on it. We're not anywhere near that particular number. So, if people bought into it because they thought, all right, well, this is going to generate so many new jobs and so many more businesses that will produce enough additional tax revenue to make up for whatever it was that was lost, that clearly has not been the case, because year after year, we don't have additional funds, we're losing money and we're cutting things. So, the proof is in the pudding. If this had generated additional revenue, we wouldn't be worried about, you know, larger class sizes or not having social workers to help kids who are in need.
Now, bringing it back to education, too, one of the things that we used to talk about in Kansas prior to this tax, air quotes, experiment, was that the reason these corporate headquarters liked to come to Kansas was because the children of the upper-level management and even down through all of the employees were guaranteed a very good education in this area without their parents having to shell out money for a private school. It was relatively safe. I mean, here we've been having hate crimes left and right. We've been having our schools not... I mean, people are now thinking that private school is the only way their kid's going to get the attention that they need. And it just didn't used to be that way. What do you have to say about that?
Well, I think if you create a nice place to live, then people will want to live there. And I think part of creating a nice place to live is providing the the things that make a nice neighborhood. So good schools, roads that are paved, money to provide policing, money to provide, you know, all of the things that government provides. I know we think of government as awful, but, you know, that they also make sure our water is clean and is here. And we need those services. And without them, no one's going to want to live here. So if we provide a solid education foundation, then not only is it attractive to other people to move here, but then it's attractive for our kids to stay here and raise their own families here. And business is developed when you give people the tools that they need to, you know, if they have an idea, they can follow it. If they have a solid foundation and they know that if they start a business, they're going to have the opportunity to succeed because there's enough people here who are employable because they received the education and the skills they needed when they were growing up. So all of those things. I mean, I've talked to several business owners, and I know that this isn't unique. I know that there have been business owners that have lobbied in Topeka to say, the tax savings that I'm getting from this is not worth what it's costing the state. You know, I'm not saving enough in my taxes to do, I'm not saving enough money in my taxes to hire another employee. I've maybe saved enough taxes so that I could go on vacation, but that's not what I want. I want to be able to know that, you know, my employment pool is stocked and ready with good folks and that this is a place where I can entice people to move to.
You know, Heather, this is kind of a personal question, but it's something I've always wanted to ask you. How did you convince your husband to run for office? I mean, that just seemed like a feat in itself there.
Well, you know, so he and I have both been involved for a while, but, you know, out of the two of us, people think that I'm the mouthy one, which obviously, okay, so if I'm walking to Topeka to raise awareness, I probably am the mouthy one. But so he is a contractor. He is in construction, and his schedule was more flexible than mine. And so we had a middle child who came down with a very rare illness. He's fine now, but so my husband had really scaled back his business while our son was going through a bunch of treatment plans. And so then it was like right after our son was doing really well, and it was before Jared had hired his crews to like go back to work, you know, full on, when he was approached by the party to run, and they said, you know, look, you guys are involved, you know all the stuff, would you be willing to do this? We need the rep that was in our district. She was getting married and she was moving out of the district, and so they needed somebody to cover our district. And it was before he had revamped up his business, and he was like, well, if we're ever going to do it, this is the time to do it, and they need us now. And the thing that he was like, okay, well, I can do it once. And then, you know, he's like, I'll serve the one term, and if it's not awful. And then he got up there, and he saw how much work needed to be done. And then once you see it, you can't unsee it. Like, once you know that there's kids not getting the care they need in the Department of Children and Families because we don't have money to fully staff it up, like, you feel obligated to stay there to fix it. And I think at this point it's just, we know too much. We just want it better.
I was going to say, I find it hard to believe that he went there and didn't find it to be awful.
Oh, it was terrible.
Because he was there last session when it was still very
awful.
Extreme, right?
Right. And he, I mean, that first session was hard. And fortunately, so there was two Democratic freshmen last cycle. It was him and Representative Heiberger out of Lawrence, and Representative Heiberger is wonderful and so bright. Everybody calls him Boog. And so Jared really had an ally. If you're going to be a freshman in a year of only 28 Democrats and it's super extreme right, do it the year that Representative Heiberger is also the freshman. So he had a friend, and it was just like, you know, they were going to get through it together. But there were moments when it was like, okay, we have a chance and we're fighting and we're, you know, maybe we can't get anything passed, but, you know, they could put amendments that would kill something on a bill in committee, or they, you know, there were things that they could do that were successful that maybe nobody else knew about, but they knew that, okay, they were gross at them, but they were still something hot, and so they could give up. And so now this year just seems like I mean, they're still grossly outnumbered. When you talk about a body of 125 and only 40 are on the Democratic side of the aisle, even with the centrist or sensible or moderate leaning folks on the other side, you're still outnumbered. But compared to last year, it's much better.
So, when do you anticipate finishing up your walk, and are there any events planned in Topeka when you reach the Capitol building? Did we lose you? Well, I think we lost Heather, but thank you for calling us, and hopefully next year this won't be a needed thing to continue the tradition of walking from Merriam to Topeka. They shouldn't be making it there until tomorrow morning, is my understanding. But I'm not sure what time they're getting in, and I'm sorry we weren't able to ask her that. But thank you to Heather Owsley, and thank you for tuning in to Every Woman. Be sure to stay tuned for Urban Connections with Donna Wolf, and then guess who's coming to Kansas City with MC Richardson. And next week, tune in for the KKFI band auction. We will not be with you next week, but there will be some live bands playing in the studio, and you will have the opportunity to bid on them to come play at your private event and you have a good time.